Welcome to Discoville, where we discuss both Star Trek Discovery and the Orville here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we take an in-depth look at each of these shows and discover that both of them can coexist in today's fandom as they introduce us to fresh, new, and exciting stories, characters, galactic destinations, and so much more. I'm Norm, one of your co-pilots here on Discoville, but you know I don't do the show alone. With me on this Quantum Drive Orville Rewatch episode in the co-pilot seat is Mr. Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. How are you, Kevin?
You know, I'm good, but you know what, Norm? If you were lost somewhere or taken, Ed Mercer would find a way to find you, so you suck.
I do suck, because I totally would have followed the Admiralty. Because Admiral Tucker has a couple of pictures that he may not want me to have spread around.
Okay.
I was young. It was my first year at the Academy. I met some guy named Derulio. I don't know what's going on.
It's good to be back talking here on Discoville about the Orville as, you know, we're doing our rewatch. It's fun, man. This is really fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's... I guess sometimes like the best way to go through kind of like this depressive state of not having anything on that's new is to rewatch it, because sometimes if you only watched it for the first run through of a season, it is kind of brand new if you haven't seen it in a while, right?
It is. And what's really cool is you notice things that you haven't before, and maybe your perspective changes on certain things. I remember one of the biggest criticisms about the first few episodes of Orville was the humor, and we were talking about that in the last episode. So it's kind of fun to go back, you know. I mean, like, you know, recently on Culture Clash, Kyle and I did a rewatch of all of the Avengers Infinity War movie universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it was amazing how much our perspective changed on certain movies after rewatching them again.
So you're saying that you're not as big of a fan of Iron Man 3 anymore?
Is that? Oh, no, I'm still loving on Iron Man 3. And I have not changed.
Well, we're really excited to talk about this next episode here on Discoville for the Orville rewatch. But before we do that, Kevin, would you please open hailing frequencies and let our fans know how they can find or contact us online?
Of course. You can always find Discoville on the subspace channels. You can find the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com, where you can find all of our great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network, including the show you're listening to now. FPNet is also on the Podbean app. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play for Android users. We are on Twitter at DiscovillePod. We are on Instagram at DiscovillePod. And also on Facebook, Fandom Podcast Network. Head on over there. And also we have our Discoville Facebook page group, so check that out. If you'd like to contact us directly, you can hail us through email at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com or at discovillepodcast@gmail.com. I'm Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Norman, where can we find you on Twitter and Instagram?
You can find me on Twitter at Starfighter1701 and on Instagram at SoCalSwordFighter.
And, of course, our other co-founder and also editor of this show, too. You can find Kyle at AKyleW on Twitter and on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Also, please support us here at Discoville and the Fandom Podcast Network. Head on over to the TeePublic store and search Fandom Podcast Network if you would like a cool new Discoville logo. We've got some new stuff up there from all of our shows, so make sure you check that out. And it supports us, and you get to wear some awesome, cool Fandom Podcast Network swag. And last but not least, we'd love some more reviews on iTunes. Please head on over to iTunes, search Fandom Podcast Network, and please leave a review for us. And if you like what you're hearing here on Discoville, please mention that. We'll give you a shout-out.
Very good. Thank you very much, Kevin. Let's close those hailing frequencies because it's time to engage the quantum drive. So let's slingshot all the way back to early September 2017 for a look back at the Orville Season 1 and how it changed the landscape of primetime science fiction TV as we know it, as we cruise towards this fall and season 2 of the Orville. So sit back, relax, unzip those uniform jackets, and let's go off duty as we head into the officer's lounge. So during this season one rewatch of The Orville, we're going to be spoilering a lot of what we're talking about. So if you haven't seen season one of The Orville at all, or if you haven't seen this particular episode that we're talking about, which is the second episode of The Orville season one, Command Performance, please pause the show and go watch it, like, right now, and then come back and listen to the show, unpause the show and listen to us. We'll be covering all of season one in order, so at least you know that this is going like sequentially in order by date as it was broadcast on network TV.
Wait, hold on. I got a funny quick story I got to tell you about this.
Sure.
I was DVRing it at the time, mm-hmm. and this is the one episode that got messed up for me because football was running late, and my DVR did not catch like the ending of it. So what I had to do was when I came home at the time, it was recording, and I realized, oh man, this is going to catch the ending. So I had to record and program, what was it, The Simpsons or Family Guy that was coming after it, uh-huh. and had to hit record so it caught that. But when it's on the DVR, the second half of this episode for me is listed as like The Family Guy or something.
Oh, weird. You know, I think I remember that because we were actually messaging each other in real time. You're like, football game's still on. Like, what am I going to do?
Yeah, it messed up. But eventually it came out on iTunes, so I can watch it now on iTunes. So
that's true. I mean, that's a good way of being able to catch up with the shows also. You know, that's – how are you watching it right now? Are you watching it through?
Mostly through iTunes right now because I have my I mean, I could watch it on my computer if I want, but I really like using the – what do you call it? The Apple TV.
Yeah,
because you get a really, really nice HD through that, and that's in the other room, and I love watching it on the big screen because I learned some stuff watching these two, you know, this episode and next week's episode they're going to be covering later on and so on, that there's so much detail in that HD.
Totally. I totally agree. And we just want to make sure that we are letting everyone know that we're going to go in sequential order, and this is the perfect time for new fans, actually, to jump in on The Orville, because when you watch the show as your first time rewatch, then you can get kind of like our coverage on it during our rewatch. So previously on the Quantum Drive rewatch on Discoville episode 20, we discussed the pilot and premiere episode of Old Wounds and how that launched pretty much all of the themes of The Orville, including kind of the main characters and the Planetary Union, understanding how that kind of structure works, how Captain Ed Mercer got command of the Orville, how he kind of had a problem with his wife Kelly and a certain blue Reptesian alien named Derulio, and the Krill. I know that's a favorite of yours, Kevin.
Yes.
They introduced us to the Krill. Mm-hmm. And of course, I mean, aside from kind of like the mechanical parts of the show, we also kind of got used to Seth MacFarlane doing science fiction humor, and how that kind of like is a thread and a through line through the tone of his shows. But as we go through these rewatches, one of the things I'd actually like to focus on is how the humor, how we actually receive it now in our rewatches and how it develops, I guess. It almost matures in a way where the humor isn't as in your face or as crass or as upfront, but it really serves as kind of like a balancing act with really good drama. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. There's a couple of lines that stood out that, you know, it's something that I think that would be in normal conversation with like you and I today. Mm-hmm. And it just, but it's really quick. It doesn't like drag on or play out.
Right.
You know? And, so, yeah.
And I think that's something that is probably a part of Seth's maturity now as a writer, or in his collaborative process, he's like, well, maybe I shouldn't drag on those specific scenes as long as like he would in Family Guy or, right. you know, say like Ted or in some of his movies, right. you know, like A Million Ways to Die in the West. So now we're going into episode 2, Command Performance. This was written by Seth MacFarlane. This was directed by somebody we all know in the Trek community by the name of Robert Duncan McNeil. How do we know that name, Kevin?
Oh, well, I would say first appearance as Locarno in Star Trek Next Generation. But
Nick
more,
Locarno.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
he was in that famous episode where he was a cadet with a, you know, Wesley Crusher, and they tried to do some fancy maneuver during graduation. Someone got killed, and it was a good episode to see Wesley get basically talked down to and put in his place by Picard. It was interesting. But eventually, we had him as the awesome helmsman in Star Trek Voyager.
That's right, Mr. Tom Paris. But you and I actually saw him way earlier on as Courtney Cox's boyfriend,
I knew Kevin. You were gonna say that. I knew
Kevin, her boyfriend, whose name is Kevin, in the 1987 seminal fantasy science fiction classic Masters of the Universe.
Yes, I thought about that, but I knew you'd want to bring that up. I just want to go on record, by the way, as I finished up my rewatch a while ago of Voyager. Tom Paris is my favorite character on that show because he went through redemption. You know, he was in jail, you know, and he got pretty much pulled out of jail to be the helms person for Voyager, Kathryn Janeway. And I liked the evolution of his character.
He was Maquis? I don't remember.
I think so. No, he wasn't Maquis.
Was he just like a wise guy?
Yeah. You know what? I saw the Star Trek fans are probably yelling like, yes, he was. No, he wasn't. I can't remember off. It's been a while since I've done a rewatch of Voyager. But yeah, he was.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I know he wasn't Maquis because it was Chakotay and his group was Maquis.
But what was funny was I think he was in like a New Zealand penal colony or Australian penal colony or something.
New Zealand.
Like
he was in New Zealand on a penal colony in New Zealand.
Oh, but the Australians are laughing at that right now.
It's so random and weird, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Anywho, so it was directed by Robert Duncan McNeil, this episode, and it aired on September 17th, 2017. So here's what happened. As Lieutenant Commander Bortus requests a leave of absence to care for his and Clyden's egg, Captain Ed Mercer learns a great deal about the Mauchline reproductive habits and their uncanny ability to deflect humor. The Orville and her crew. No, it's so funny, right? I'm not going to get a laugh out of you, am I? No, sir.
No, it's okay.
The Orville and her crew are on routine patrol as Isaac receives a distress signal from a nearby transport ship, the USS Blériot, under attack from the Krill. Seeing that his parents are aboard the transport ship, Ed and Kelly form an away team party to investigate the transport, leaving the highest-ranking bridge officer, Lieutenant Alara Catan, in charge, as Bortus, who normally would be in command, is strictly unavailable while brooding his egg. Ed and Kelly and the transport ship vanish as the crew of the Orville discover that the transport is some kind of holographic trap. Thrust into full command and uncomfortable in her ability to decisively lead the crew, Alara puts the Orville in harm's way, losing the respect of her crew and doubting her right to lead. But Dr. Claire Finn bolsters Alara's confidence and encourages her to face up to her command decisions, right or wrong, as the true testaments of leadership. Meanwhile, the technologically advanced Calavon have placed Ed and Kelly in a perfect recreation of their former apartment in New York when they were first married. As they reminisce and relive fond memories of the past, they soon realize that they have been put on display as a living attraction in a Calavon zoo for all patrons to see. Admiral Tucker orders Alara to return to Earth instead of approaching the powerful Calavon, writing off Ed and Kelly as casualties of duty. Alara, finally understanding her role as a leader of this crew, violates these orders and returns Ed and Kelly along with an alien child by offering the Calavon something even more valuable than samples of the human species, a treasure trove of reality television from Earth, a true human zoo. For her bravery and ingenuity under fire, Lieutenant Alara is awarded the Sapphire Star for her actions. As the episode closes, Bortus's egg finally hatches something impossible, a female Mauchline. That was a fantastic episode to watch. And Kevin, your smiles on your face from ear to ear, big wide grin, because I know how much you like this episode, and I do too. Let's talk about our original memories of when this episode aired on September 17th, 2017. What do you remember about this, aside from it being time delayed by a football game?
Oh, gosh. There was specific things. Well, first of all, Alara Catan, she's got eyebrows.
She does have eyebrows. And that bright red lipstick that matches her uniform.
Yes. You know, I think it was... It's really weird. I remember... Is it weird that I remembered the first half more than the last half of it? What I remembered more was what Alara was going through and her issues of dealing with her first run at command more than where Mercer and Kelly were and what was happening to them. I know it's a weird thing. Maybe it had to do with when I originally watched this because I had to, as I mentioned earlier, I had to switch from one show to the other because of the DVR situation. So, and part of it I missed. Part of it was cut off. I missed part of this episode. But now that I'm able to rewatch the whole thing, it's interesting looking back. But still, the part with Alara and what she goes through, to me, is still the strongest part. And that's what I remember from the first time that I saw it, as opposed to the second time. But I love the fact that we have a pretty strong A story related to the B story of what's happening with the captain and first officer being in a zoo.
What I like about this episode is the fact that they're bringing in kind of like a junior character to be the second episode lead story, right? Because Alara isn't, I mean, you would think that, okay, they did Ed and Kelly, and to some degree they did Gordon and Lamar. But, you know, it's usually they go down the line, you know, like say we were in Star Trek The Next Generation, it would have been a Picard story, then it would have been like a Riker story, then it would have been like a Data story. You know, they would have gotten to like a Wesley story eventually because he wasn't really all that important to bring into the first half of the first season. But they jump right to the end. They like jump right to the youngest and probably least capable officer for command. But I think that's what really is the true heart of the storytelling in this episode.
Yeah, and there was some very obviously there was the in your face funny lines. Like I love the one when they're getting the briefing of Bortus's egg, and Lamar goes, "Where does it come out? The butt?" And then Mercer goes, "I'm sorry, but I didn't ask him the specifics." And then he goes, "How is that not the first thing you ask?" You know? But then there was another subtle one that I like too that came from Alara, where she is running around after she gets, you know, she's having basically a panic attack to some degree, you know, and she's like throws up. And then there's the Ensign Parker that says, "Are you okay?" And she goes, "I'm fine." And he's still standing there. And she goes, "Go away now." <I know.
laughs> Well, the funny thing about, I think, the true reality or the realism, the feeling of realism of that scene is if anyone has ever been thrust into a management position haphazardly or like all in an instant, say, okay, take care of this, manage all these people and get this job done. That is not an easy thing to do. Some people can rise to the occasion or some people just absolutely crumble. And it's neither here nor there when it comes to if you did right or if you did wrong. It's the decision-making process and the responsibility along the way that builds character.
You're right. When you're right about one thing, some people rise to it and some people don't. And I see that a lot in the industry that I am. I see people that were at my level and then might rise above me for one particular reason. They want to take a different choice. And I see how some can definitely do it well. But the one problem that I always see, and I think Dr. Clare said something about this, not in so many words, the one problem a lot of new people that come into some type of command is being careful, is micromanaging and not trusting the people below them to do their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And that's an observation that she really kind of hones in on when she becomes that doctor, mentor, counselor figure that I love about Dr. Finn. And I love that they established that with her early in this episode. So what I also liked about this is that you see that she has this Zelayan super strength and she can handle herself in a fight and she's really good at engineering and she completely has really no interest at all in taking command. And I think that's something, again, you know, people have to kind of come into their own when that happens. But I think that because Halston Sage is so young, and because she's probably still has, she probably doesn't have her feet underneath her character yet, it lends a lot to the natural nervousness and trepidation that this character has. Because it's either she's incredibly good as an actress, and I do believe she is, but I think she's also drawing from something else.
Also, keep this in mind too, the writers did a really good job of giving her not only other people to learn from in a command experience, i.e. the doctor and Bortus when he was sitting on the egg. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, he was angry, you know, for obvious reasons, but he gave her some advice. But also listening to the criticism of her peers, specifically that one particular scene when Malloy asks, can I speak freely? And he talks about that line of, you know, if you were the one out there, Mercer would break this, would go against his order and do this. And so she's able to be objective about this and listen to that and then make her decision and make it final.
Right. And I think that's kind of like the true test of becoming a leader, you know, in her experience of growing as an officer. So what did you get out of this rewatch, like specifically? Is there something that you saw differently that you didn't remember seeing before?
Yeah, I want to actually touch on I guess it's kind of the B plot, if you want to look at it, and that's with Kelly and Mercer on this zoo planet. Mm-hmm. I didn't really appreciate this as much as I did the first time because I was really distracted but pleasantly distracted by Halston Stage's performance and what she was going through. But seeing this planet that basically, you know, and to some degree, like, gets these unwillingly participants to be these attractions, which is actually quite sad, especially when you see the different types of other subjects that are unfortunately in cages, including the one little alien kid. It's quite sad, actually, but still was able. And the guy that played the administrator, that guy was great. The makeup job on mm-hmm. that and his set of his office and his costume was fantastic. I didn't really appreciate that the first time. But also, too, it gives Kelly and Ed a chance to kind of, you know, take a step back and look back at their relationship. Obviously, we know the big problem, but they actually kind of bond a little bit while in captivity.
And then things kind of naturally take its course and they kind of get back into the routine, you know, that they, you know, that started kind of like their downward spiral.
Yeah, exactly. This is the time where they get a chance to actually admit what went wrong, address it. Even though they still struggle with it, they are able to more gel together as professional colleagues as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, I do appreciate the Ed and Kelly story. And in the first couple episodes, I do remember that they're focusing more and more and more on Ed's bitterness, you know, with the whole divorce and the cheating and all of that. And sometimes I'm like, okay, are we going through this again? But, you know, this is a rewatch, so of course we're going through this again. But what I always loved about this episode is that there's this quintessential moment where you get to have that really great Star Trek dynamic between a doctor and an officer. You know, in this case, it's Claire Finn, you know, advising Alara Katan. And we've seen that traditionally in so many different Star Trek episodes, right? You know, most famously, the first time we saw that was in The Cage, when Christopher Pike was having a drink poured by Dr. Boyce, you know, and that's when Pike says, I don't want to be responsible anymore for, you know, 400 and something odd lives. You know, I'm tired of deciding on who lives and who dies. We saw the same thing in Star Trek Beyond, you know, almost the same scene when Kirk is like, you know, it's like I'm a year older than my father when he died. And then Bones starts pouring him that really old scotch that he stole from Chekhov's locker, you know, but yeah. there's always this great collaboration between the doctor figure, you know, and who the doctor needs to counsel. And I always thought that was really, really cool. But the other thing that I really liked about, you know, like seeing differently in this episode was how Claire was so natural in her role, or the actress, Penny Johnson-Gerald, was so natural in this role. It's almost as if she's played this role for years.
Well, I have a little bit of trivia, which probably, you know, is the reason why, is that she, for 4 seasons, played Captain Gates on Castle, where she commanded detectives. And also, wasn't she also in 24?
She was the president's wife.
Yeah. So she's had some leadership acting roles, and so she knows how to command perform.
Oh, well done, sir. Plus one to you. the other thing that I wanted to just kind of like make a quick point on is that this is kind of like a Kobayashi Maru for Alara. You know, because the Kobayashi Maru, Kirk said this in The Wrath of Khan, he told us to Savick in the Turbo Lift, that it's not a question of right or wrong, it's a question of character. You know, what do you do when these decisions have to be made? You know, how do you live with these decisions and how do you move forward? So I thought that was kind of a, you know, it's not beyond us to think that, you know, that Seth isn't drawing from a lot of Star Trek inspiration, being the big fan that he is. So did things work better in this time around in the rewatch? Like, did the humor work better, or did this relatively stay the same? Was there anything that really kind of stood out this time for you that worked better or fell flat?
Well, in the last episode we talked, I didn't apologize for liking the crass humor. You know, I found it funny. I know a lot of people were put off by it for obvious reasons, and I completely understand and respect that. So in a way, it was nice to still have the humor there, just toned down a little bit, you know, not kicking a dead horse type joke where you do it over and over again. So it was nice to see that. But it was also nice to see other characters stand out. And one of them was Bordas for me. And I got to tell you, the show could also take chances not only in the humor, but also showing the backside of a male Mocklin naked sitting on an egg.
Right? I mean, how is that not like shock value? But it's not, but it is.
In any other Star Trek series, you're not going to see something like that. And this is why I like the Orville, because it takes these little chances that these show won't. You know, we've talked about this before, where Star Trek, to a certain degree, has kind of a sterile feeling because they're prim and proper, and yet, you know, but here in the Orville, we get more of like what we would be doing in a situation like this. The conversation's more casual, and this allows them to take more chances, use certain language, of course, that you wouldn't hear in Star Trek, but also use certain imagery that you wouldn't see before. So, you know, seeing that was great. And this was probably one of the episodes too I started looking at Malloy differently, and really him becoming one of my favorite characters. And I had mentioned in the first, you know, rewatch of the first one, Old Wounds, where there's kind of a redemption story for him as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to be in kind of like the producer's room when Seth is selling, like, well, how else would you like portray a Mocklin trying to brood his egg if not naked? Right?
Full body makeup, bro. You're sitting on an egg.
But think about that. I mean, that was really intricate body makeup. That was really impressive.
Yeah, it was. Yes, it was.
So as shock value-y as that was, when you look at the quality of what was going on there, it was really high quality prosthetics.
Yeah,
so,
it was.
You know,
yep.
It wasn't just for kind of like cheap thrills. I howl at this every single time I see it. I love it when Jeffrey Tambor starts going on about the colon scan.
Yes.
You get the colon scan, or you get the what do you call it? The diverticulitis.
Yes, it gets stuck in the folds.
Oh,
my
God. It
just gestates there.
So good. And I wasn't expecting like somebody of his acting caliber to, you know, to automatically just be on the show, you know,
right,
for something
right.
like this. So
yeah.
That also kind of set the tone of, yes, Seth MacFarlane has a deep pocket of talent and friends that he can pull from, and we'll see that later on
in
subsequent episodes. Was there anything in this episode that you would have liked to have changed?
Not really, because in episode, I mean, one thing that Orville has done so well is, obviously, and there's a good point that Seth MacFarlane made about quality, not quantity. So they're not, none of these episodes that we've seen in season one have been phoned in my opinion, where I could say it felt like, you know, in some Next Gen episodes or some other ones, you know,
mm-hmm.
And, this one, no, not really. I think it was a good episode that really developed a main character, and then allowed the supporting cast that will get highlighted later on in future episodes to also share in, you know, some great lines, you know, and just little things about how Isaac, you know, she should have listened to Isaac, you know, about what she should have not done, and she didn't, and that led to, you know, the ship getting damaged. So there's all these little things like that, and I don't think I would, because I thoroughly enjoyed the episode. Now that I have it all in, it's not in two parts, you know, from the DVR. So, and just, you know, it's, this show really hasn't hit a skid. I mean, I like some episodes more than others, but no, this is a good episode. I wouldn't change a thing.
I totally agree, and I'm really surprised that, like, usually there is kind of like a dip, you know, in the momentum, you know, from first episode to second episode. We've seen that a lot because we've anticipated the pilot so much, from when it gets spoiled to when the next episodes come out. But for some reason, and maybe it's because this show caught us off guard, and we've mentioned this before on previous Discovilles, that this show kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah. It did. Right. It did. It. We saw one quick trailer. We thought, oh, is this, you know, Galaxy Quest, whatever? And we didn't know, but it obviously had been in production for quite a while. And I love pleasant surprises like that.
Yeah, so do I. And I think that's probably why we're focusing on how good the shows are, because I don't think we've built up any real expectations or put this on any kind of pedestal that we usually would do if we saw something and really kind of dove into the spoilers and all the pre-press and the marketing of that. But I don't think I would have changed anything in this episode either. Now, yeah, I get that, you know, it was nice that Ed and Kelly had that pot brownie moment, you know, earlier on in the shuttle, and that kind of paid off later on in the apartment building. You know, yeah, I know it's a little on the nose, and sometimes the crass humor does work, and especially with the whole, you know, the egg thing's like, where did it come out the butt? You know, how's that? Not the first question you asked.
And the whole, the intro, I loved how it started in the beginning with Kermit the Frog on his table, and he's trying to do the humor with Bordas, and it's just not working.
It's such a sideways tangent, though, seeing Kermit the Frog, right?
It is, but what makes it, though, is when he's trying to describe to Bordas that what he is. I mean, if Bordas was a human, I think that Mercer's, you know, description of Kermit would have been different. So he's trying to kind of build up Kermit than he probably would to someone else that knew what Kermit was. And, you know, I like how he said, oh, he was a leader of a people, and he was, you know, and he inspired millions. And so I'm like, to a certain degree, he's very right.
Actually, that's a really good point, because I would like to have, you know, it'd be interesting if he actually described Kermit the Frog differently to every single person in his crew.
Yes, and I just realized that's a precursor to this story about what Alara goes through. You know, she was able to inspire her crew members when she went against the order and do this. So that's kind of funny.
I thought you were going to say it's not easy being green, but she's not green.
That was too easy.
Maybe she was green after that double Zalean tequila.
Yeah.
So I want to kind of preface this for anyone who's listening that's a first-time watcher of the Orville. I want to ask you a question, Kevin, about now seeing the entirety of the Orville in its 12-episode context. Did this rewatch kind of change anything about how you see the rest of the episodes?
That's a good question. I off the top of my head, maybe, just because I know it's coming.
Say, for instance, say Firestorm, because this is kind of the other bookend of Alara's conflict with personal confidence and leadership.
Yeah, this is kind of, this sets her up for that episode, because that's kind of like, you know, it's kind of Command Performance Part 2, if you want to look at it, because of what goes on in that episode. But it's what it did for me now, looking at it, is realizing the alien cultures and the differences that they have and the challenges that the crew of the Orville ended up going through in season one. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at it originally, I had no idea what was going to happen. And it's interesting to see, like, I'd be very curious if they came across these people again, you know, that have this basic zoo of people that they've captured or traded for. But maybe it'll go in a different location now that they are going to be watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians all the time. And I feel sorry for them now.
You know, what's kind of funny is that this episode kind of makes me believe that Seth pulled from a couple episodes of the original series. First of all, the cage. I have to believe that he pulled a little bit of inspiration from the cage, because substitute the Calavon for the Talosians and how they put human beings on display for their own pleasure.
I looked up some stuff because I was curious about this episode, and there's also a 1960 Twilight Zone episode with future Star Trek actors Susan Oliver, Byron Morrow, and Vic Perrin, where they played Martians in the episode People Are Alike All Over. And then it goes on to talk about, obviously, the episode The Cage as well.
Yeah.
And I got to assume that he's a fan, not only the original Star Trek, but who didn't watch, you know, Twilight Zone on those marathons on, what was it? Where did they play them, always on, like, July 4th weekend or something like that?
Yeah, on TV Land or Nick at Night.
Yeah,
or something.
I mean,
like,
who
that
didn't sit around watching all that stuff when you were a kid? I mean, I did.
And then cross-referencing Susan Oliver, who played she played the Orion Green slave girl in the cage. So yeah. And also, so one of the things that I've always loved about this show, and this is the last point I'd like to make, the episode titles are so clever. Because command performance, I can see it in two ways. Obviously, with Alara's struggles with command and her performance in command, but also being on display in a zoo. You are literally 24 hours a day having to perform for these zoo patrons. So, I don't know. I just think that a lot of thought, more thought than I believed possible, were put into every single detail of the show.
Agree. Yeah. You know, and it continues all the way through this first season. It's amazing.
Yep. A lot of care, a lot of attention, and a lot of focus. And we can't wait to bring you further episodes for this rewatch. But we are also huge fans of Star Trek Discovery, and we are also huge fans of the movie Galaxy Quest. And the reason why we bring up Galaxy Quest in this show is because we thought that that's what the Orville was going to be. We thought it was going to be a little
exactly,
bit...
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, we thought it was going to be not as much Star Trek and a little bit more Galaxy Quest. So, being inspired by Galaxy Quest, it's time on Discoville to activate the Omega 13. Because when activated, the Omega 13 technology allows a 13-second span of time to be rewritten, to relive something, or even possibly correct a mistake. So for command performance, Kevin, was there a particular moment or event that made you either want to rewatch it or to rewrite it and hit that Omega 13 button?
Well, I kind of tipped my hat on this earlier about wanting to change something earlier when we were talking about that. But I actually did rewatch the entire scene again when Alara is put in command after the disappearance of Ed and Kelly. Because it's quite funny, but it's also serious. And the whole scene with Dr. Finn and the speech that she gives. But then, you know, she's running around and she goes to her room. She talks to the Admiral again and all that kind of stuff. And or that maybe that's a little bit later. And then, you know, when she throws up and it's almost kind of like I'm living it with her because I can see myself feeling that. Maybe not handling it exactly the way that she did. But it's a very, very good scene, the way that was put together. And the fact, too, as I mentioned earlier, the Ensign Parker that she says, go away now, he comes back later in the episode when the ship is damaged, and he actually gets hurt. Mm-hmm. He doesn't die, but he gets hurt. So it's interesting how that kind of came full circle.
Do you think that it would have been a little bit more impactful on her if he were killed in the line of duty because of her mistake?
I think it would have been a little more devastating for her. Because Claire says that, you know, no one did die, mm-hmm. you know, so you don't stress on that, but you do learn from this so it doesn't happen again and puts these people in this peril again by making that type of decision. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm glad they didn't kill him. I think that would have been a little too heavy a message for her to deal with at that time. Mm-hmm. But we get a little more of that, I think, in the future episode, Firestorm.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I think that they balanced out her responsibilities and making the consequences seem real, but not lethal or tragic.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite moments in the entirety of this 12-episode series comes from this episode. And it's... I remember this, you know, ever since I saw it, and it was something that just really just kind of like took my breath away a little bit. When Alara is basically saying to Claire, she says, relieve me of command. You're the only person that can do it. You know, Claire's like, no, but I will advise you. And she said, command is all about the balance of being between inspiring confidence in your leadership and knowing when to trust your people.
Yeah.
But the way that Penny Johnson-Gerald delivers that line, again, it's just like she has advised captains for decades because right. She's like, I can actually command the ship if I wanted to. And she actually did at the end. She's like, oh, crap. Yeah. You know? But she's pulling some really, she's almost kind of like Bones, Crusher, and Guinan, like all at the same time.
Ooh, good references. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because Bones... The reason why I picked these particular, I would say, advisors, not necessarily physicians, but advisors, because like Bones in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, he's like, don't mince words, Bones. What do you really feel? You know, or what do you really think? And Bones doesn't, and neither does Claire. I think that Sarah, she also has the empathy of Crusher dealing with somebody who's younger, but I also think she has this great wisdom and weight that Guinan has. And of course, there's a funny reference at the end when Claire says, I'll try to be your Obi-Wan whatever I can. And then Lara says, my what? And she goes, never mind.
Yeah, I love that too.
If the listeners can't tell, I absolutely adore and love Penny Johnson-Gerald. I think she is I always did since, I guess it was when she was Cassidy Yates in Deep Space Nine.
And can I just say, she is like one of the best look, the way that they dress her in that awesome smock, mm-hmm. and that green outfit, yet she's still got that little kind of green little like thing in her hair that matches her outfit.
Oh yeah.
She looks sharp.
Yeah. She looks fantastic. She just owns that part. And there's a lot, if you really pay attention, there's a lot of great things that come out of this episode for her character, especially kind of like her relationship with Yaphet and how that kind of like unfolds. So, so thank you for your Omega 13 pick, Kevin, but it's time on Discoville to discuss what's happening out there in social media concerning special news or updates on Discovery and the Orville. So please, Kevin, let us know what you have deciphered for Subspace Signals.
Well, of course, we have to check the Twitter feeds. If you're not following the Orville or Star Trek Discovery on Twitter, you should. But you should also check out the actors and the directors and the creators, because they have been very forthcoming with a lot of fun information and have been very entertaining to watch. Now, with this being Command Performance episode that we're covering, I think it's their pin tweet, the Orville. You know how you see funny memes where, like, I've never seen this, and there's always some funny, like, gif or meme when you respond? You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they did a similar thing, and it says, friend, I've never seen the Orville, and then me, and it shows a very funny gif of Malloy doing that famous line to Alara when he's asking to speak freely, and he says, you suck. So I thought that was very funny.
Apropos, yeah.
Yes, and also one of the Orville cast recently had a birthday, the lovely Adrian Palicki. She had a birthday, mm-hmm. and they did a great little birthday wish here on the Orville. And of course, Mark Jackson, of course, who plays Isaac, did a little celebrating for her birthday as well and said, more Yaphet Jello shots in honor of the birthday of the beautiful Adrian Palicki. Look at Norm MacDonald and the Orville. And someone made actual little Yaphet green Jello shots.
Does that mean that Yaphet's going to come and like suck those things out of our stomachs?
Yes, it does.
Oh, those look lethal. Look at those things.
I know. Yeah. So if you can, Orville retweeted it, but if you also follow Mark Jackson at Mark Jackson ACTS, you can see that funny picture there. It's very, very cool.
So. Mark Jackson @.
Yeah. So, what we love about Star Trek Discovery, because we got some Star Trek Discovery love here, mm-hmm. is that they were very cool. Recently, we shared we experienced Star Wars May the 4th Be With You. And it's become an official, well, to a certain degree, official Star Wars holiday. It's not pre-printed on calendars yet, but it should be. But there's
Is it pre-printed on Star Wars calendars?
Maybe. I would assume so, you know. But you know how like your generic calendars will have the Father's Day, Mother's Day, the Christmas, you know. Right. One day we'll see Star Wars Day up there.
Let's hope so.
So they decided to show some little love, Star Trek Discovery, and they had a great cast of all of Star Trek Discovery cast, and it looked like they were doing a premiere because they're all dressed to the nines. And it says, happy Star Wars Day from Star Trek Discovery. There's plenty of room in the universe for both. #May the Force May the 4th be with you, hashtag Star Wars Day. Oh. And there's a wonderful picture of the whole cast there. So I love the fact, you know how there's been like, you know, some friendly rivalry between Star Trek and Star Wars fans. I love the fact that they're showing love all around.
Yeah, that rivalry has only happened forever.
And what's great, though, is when you did certain hashtags, you got fun, cool little emojis. And with hashtag May the Force Be With You, you got a little Chewie emoji. And then when you said at hashtag Star Wars Day, you got a little Han Solo emoji. So I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, great. That's a great picture of the cast. It must have been from one of the premieres, and there's just kind of resharing it. But
yeah. Now, Star Trek alumni, actor, and director Jonathan Frakes, of course, have directed both Star Trek Discovery and Orville episodes. I wanted to share a tweet from him.
It is a treat, though, right?
And it's something that kind of hit me in a little warm spot because I'm a huge fan of the relationship between Riker and his Imzadi, Deanna Troi. And it says, more surprise visit on the set of Star Trek CBS. My hashtag Imzadi at Marina_Sirtis. And there's a great picture where they're hugging each other. And one of the things that probably one of the only things that did not disappoint for me in the last Star Trek movie. Nemesis, I think it was.
The last Next Generation movie
was seeing these two finally get married and bring the relationship together. And we saw a little of that happen in Insurrection. They were kind of starting to get together. And these guys were meant to be. And I know there were some books about called Titan, which was the ship they eventually went to that followed their relationship. And these guys were meant to be together. And being a big Star Trek Next Generation fan, I love seeing stuff like this.
Just to go on a side tangent, I mean, don't you want to see kind of what happened or an explanation of why Riker and Worf had that giant rift against each other because of Deanna and All Good Things?
Oh, yes. Of the alternate future timeline. Yes. Yeah. I'm glad that they left it, you know, out there that we don't know specifically, but for obvious reasons, you know, there was a triangle there and they both loved her. And I'm sure that, you know, there's something nasty maybe happened there. Yeah. And then I guess her character died, if I remember correctly. And I think it was either, was it Riker that was holding it against Worf or was it Worf holding against Riker?
I think it was Worf holding it against Riker because when the timeline was restored, Worf and Deanna were still together.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Now, so that ends the fun little Twitter stuff here that we found, the subspace signals. But I did want to give a little tease. Next episode, I'm going to highlight one of the newest members of Star Trek Discovery, Mr. Pike himself, Anson Mount.
Exciting.
If you are not following him on Twitter, you must. This guy is very active. He's very funny. He's a pet lover, too. He loves his dog. And he has some interest that surprised me, and I'm gonna tease that for the next episode of the next rewatch that we're gonna do for the Orville.
Fantastic stuff. We have a spoiler for Captain Christopher Pike.
Yes.
How did you feel about that when you read the news
perfect
break on that?
Casting, perfect, perfect, perfect. Mm-hmm. I love Anson Mount. I love the stuff that he's been in. I'm used to having him see with the long hair from Hell on Wheels.
Hell on Wheels, yeah.
Yeah, great Western there. He's been in a bunch of other stuff, and he's a very intense guy. But when I saw like his promo shot with the short hair and his angular face, I was like, nailed it!
Man, it'll be super interesting to see like what happens. I know that they spoiled some pretty exclusive behind the scenes. This is Trek movie. Spoiled this, and I think it was a CBS promo about some of the new uniforms trending towards the original series and how that's going to start integrating into season two of Discovery. So that's very exciting to think about and anticipate. So, final thoughts, Kevin, on this rewatch episode?
Oh man, this is a great follow up to the premiere episode. It really, really is. It puts our two leads, Captain and First Officer, in jeopardy, allows them to kind of rehash yet come to a common ground of the problems they went through. you got to see one of the great cast members rise to the occasion and yet still give the rest of the cast certain moments to shine.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more.
It's the perfect episode too. We've seen, like you said, other episodes take a drop after that first one. You know, and this was perfect. It really kind of just kept the show rolling for me.
I think that, you know, looking at these rewatches, one of the things that's very surprising is that it still maintains its momentum. You know, you would think that just because we've seen it before and we had certain emotional connections with it, the way that it happened and when it, you know, we were anticipating, it's like, ooh, the pilot episode was so great. Will the second episode hold up? It does hold up. I think it's actually one of the best episodes in the series. And you're right. It's like there's not a bad episode in the series. There are just better episodes than what you like, you know? So I think that we're in for a real treat when we come to the next episode of Discoville, which will be the rewatch for About a Girl.
How is that not the first thing you ask?
The butt. So yes, on the next episode of Discoville, we're going to tease that for the next Quantum Drive rewatch. That will be episode 22 on Discoville, and we will be reviewing About a Girl. So Kevin, would you like to let our listeners know what else is going on aside from all this really cool stuff that's happening on our Discoville rewatch?
Of course. We got to talk about the other show you and I co-host, and that's our Highlander Blood of Kings podcast. And we're very, very proud to say that we always talk about everything Highlander, not just the movies, talk about the TV shows and everything else. And we're going back to a television series that hardly anyone has seen, and it's getting tougher to find on DVD, and that is the animated series, episodes 76 and 77, a two-part episode looking back on a total of four episodes, two for each of those shows, and that's been a lot of fun. So we're going to do that. And then we also have Culture Clash, our weekly fandom news show that I co-host with Kyle, talking about all of our, it's everything geeky and nerdy and pop culture. And, of course, Avengers Infinity War has been out. We have a special on that. And Kyle just recently came up to visit me here in Atlanta. We spent some time together. We also recorded a special episode of Culture Clash when he was up here. So make sure you check that out. And of course, we have Couch Potato Theater, classics, those movies that you love that are on television and you don't get up and get the DVD in your shelf. You just sit there and you watch it. And we're really, really excited. We have coming out called 1987, the classic, The Hidden. We have also our friend Adam P. O'Brien from Australia doing a special Maximum Couch Potato Theater where he's doing a four-part series on the Mad Max film. So we're excited about that. And one of my favorites here is Time Warp Part 2 of 1985. We're doing a four-part series covering all the pop culture, music, but most importantly, the movies of 1985. And Norm, we got you on for that.
Yeah, that was really fun. I mean, there are so many bits of trivia that you brought up. And as much as I love the movies that you brought up, man, the music list that you brought up was amazing.
Yes, you cannot not talk about 1985 and not touch the music.
So unbelievable. I mean, yeah, like in the top 20, not the top 20, but I think it was like in that range of songs that you highlighted for that episode, I would throw that on a Spotify list and just play that ad nauseum.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So make sure you check that out. That is out now. And we have part 3 coming out in the next month or so. Also, we have Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast talking about the Master of Suspense with hosts Tom, Brandon, and Chris. Make sure you check that out if you are curious about or a fan of Alfred Hitchcock. And last but not least, we have The End Zone, and Kyle and I are going to be returning to talking about the NFL football with all of the recent free agent signings and, of course, the draft. And a lot of other fun stuff that we're excited to get back into. And that is what's happening currently on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Well, there's no moss growing underneath our feet here on the FPN. And we love bringing you all this coverage on all things geeky in the world of fandom and pop culture. And we are excited, really excited to talk about the next episode here on the Discoville Quantum Drive rewatch. But until then, I'm Norm, and on behalf of my fellow co-pilot and shuttle podcaster, Kevin, thanks everyone for listening. And join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Discoville. hailing frequencies are now closed.